Okay, Andy, so for my first question for you, what are you currently up to? What's Halloween got going on? And I know we have the big talk of the reunion and everything going on, but talk a bit about what you currently have going on.
Well, right now we're on holidays. So just sitting here in the sun, relaxing, enjoying my first time ever, longer than 3 months on my island is fantastic. I really do enjoy the fit. Well, and the rest of my boys are wherever they live, doing the same, I hope, preparing here and there new songs, ideas, collecting, blah, blah, blah. But that's just a hobby thing to do, so there's no pressure in the moment. It starts to get a bit more and I would say work starts in April. That's when we rehearse for the first time, and we schedule like 3 or 4 rehearsal months before we finally hit the road on October. And I think we start in Mexico. That would be October this year. Until then, leisure time, so to say.
Well, I think it's really cool. You're going to be playing shows with, some of the former members of the band, and you're going to be singing on stage with Michael Kiske, which I think is going to be something that's really awesome. And, talk about how this whole reunion come about. What started this, and talk about the decision to go out and do this tour.
Well, the whole idea started actually when Gamma Ray was supporting Halloween, just accidentally. So it was not scheduled, but it was more or less happening accidentally because we met in Hamburg, and Kai, so to say, the chief, the master of Gamma Ray, Kai Hansen, the former guitarist of Halloween, he said, "Well, we just finished our album," and Wyke and I was saying, "Yeah, we just finished our album, so why for the first time don't we go together? You're supporting Halloween, that would be great for the fans, and they would probably freak out if you join Halloween for the last one or two songs and playing up there like in old days." That turned out to be such a great spectacle for the people. They really loved it. So the next step was, I think, quite clear. I mean, the logical next step would be ask Michael Kiske if he would like to join and do something like a real reunion, but don't destroy the working band, but bring the people a 2.5, 3 hour show onto stage where they actually have a 30 years of metal show with the original singer, with me for the next generation, and make a big happening out of it, because it worked so nicely with Kai playing the guitar. Then the next step, the logical step, would be have the real band on stage as well.
For as long as I've known you, Andy, I've known you a very long time now, probably close to 20 years, you've never been the person that has that crazy, ridiculous rock star ego. And most singers wouldn't do something like this. And Michael Kiske is the same thing with him. He's very laid back, and I don't know him that well, aside from having contact with him and speaking with him on this radio show and just kind of knowing him, from those interviews that I've done. And he's the same way. He doesn't have that crazy, ridiculous rock star ego. And you guys are both very laid back, very humble people, which is something that most people don't know. And I think that's a great thing. So what is it like to be able to talk to Michael and talk about doing this, and what is it like working with him?
I had the feeling he more or less feels the same way as I do. So he's quite nosy how it will work out. I think he doesn't dislike me. I don't dislike him. I think he's a really cool guy. And as he said, he's very, very laid back. So he should be a person I can get along with very nicely. Mainly, we were actually thrilled about imagining the fans down there when they finally have a chance to see him sing the old tunes, and then even together, he with me, one or two tunes from my times. Put it that way, from an egoistic point of view, I'm so happy not to have to sing all these high-pitched Michael Kiske songs anymore. I'm so relieved that he's back in the band, actually, and I just may concentrate on my own shit. So that should work out really, really, really nicely.
Yeah.
There was always a great musical chemistry between Michael Whitehead and Kai Hansen. When you listen to the Keeper albums and you listen to Walls of Jericho, they were just meant to play together. And you have that same feeling with Sasha. When Sasha joined the band, and I saw the guys live, and I saw what was going on from that standpoint. You know, he has that same chemistry with Wyke on stage, and I thought the band really just from a chemistry standpoint became better. And it wasn't until obviously till 2008 when the Gambling with the Devil tour, and I watched Gamma Ray and Helloween play together. When you guys when they played on stage, you guys were playing together. Not only was there a great chemistry between both bands, but when I was watching Sasha, Wyke and Kai play on stage together, they just fit so well together. And you know, is that something, you know, now that Kai Hansen's going to be playing on stage with you guys on this tour, you know, you know, how's that going to work out? Because I think it's going to be really, really cool. I think it's going to fit really well.
If I go through the songs now, I realize there are lots and lots of songs in the studio recordings having more than three guitars even. So that should be interesting. You are able to bring on stage even more original CD sound than possible with two guitars. And for all the rest of the songs where there are like really only two guitars, I think it's great for one of those guys to say goodbye and have a cigar. You know, So it's always 5 or 6 minutes break for maybe Sasha or for maybe Wyke or here and there Kai. And they may have a smoke, and that's great. I mean, that's the way I look at it from my personal side of view. I'm finally having some breaks in the show, having some wine or a good little cigarette there, you know, and watching the boys play. I mean, this is something really, really interesting. I never had that before. So same goes for Michael. I mean, he Michael Kiske, as far as I remember when we talked about it, he always had a smile on his face and said, yeah, that's cool. After 10 or 15 minutes, I have a break, and you go sing. And, you know, it's
right.
It's different. But I think it could be very, very interesting, not only for the fans, but also for the band itself. The only guys I'm a bit scared of is Dani and Marcus, because they have to kind of play 2.5-3 hours without break.
Right.
So I hope that turns out to be not a problem. Both say, nah, it shouldn't be a problem. Depends on how you actually design the running order. So you should not probably play 3 or 4 times Push and Eagle Fly Free without a song in mid-tempo, because then both of them will probably be dead after these songs. But there will be a way. They say it's not a problem, so I believe they are professional enough.
Yeah.
That I may believe him, but nevertheless, I'm very much looking forward to that. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, imagine you have like 30 years of metal with one band, actually, who was always there and still is here. And I personally think it's a great adventure, not only for the fans, but for myself and ourselves, definitely.
Well, knowing Marcus, I mean, I'm sure, you know, knowing what he's like, I mean, I'm sure he could play 6 hours a night and it wouldn't really bother him too much.
No, I personally think you're right, but, you know, I mean, whatever happens on tour, maybe he drank too much or he fell off the bus or whatever, you know. So, and maybe he's only capable of playing 2 or 3 hours maximum.
Right.
And for the drums, even worse. I mean, a heavy metal drummer is not really the guy to be envied, I think.
Nah. Well, you know, or you're sitting around having the flu in a social security office, you know, trying to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed and knock on wood that nothing like that will happen, but you never know. So we have to stay realistic here, and really when it comes to rehearsal and running order and all that stuff, really listen to Dani and Marcus, because these guys are, well, like the heavy workers.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, Marcus, the guy could probably play for 12 hours. And, you know, when you guys came here to Cleveland, you guys were really sick. You had a really bad case of the flu. And when you went on stage, even Marcus, I mean, you guys were pretty much spot on. You guys played really well and didn't look like, I mean, it didn't look like there was really anything wrong. And after the show, obviously after the show was over, it's a little bit different. But, you know, you guys really did play really well. And there really wasn't anybody that looked like they were off that night, even though you guys were dealing with a lot.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. But you know that we had to actually kind of stitch up Sasha with steroids.
Yeah.
So he was really, really, really sick. I mean, And in Chicago, it was close to canceling the show.
Yeah.
Again, with steroids, he could play the show, and then we finally had two days off where he could recover a little bit, and and as you know, life went on, and show went on, and show must go on, and we did not cancel not even one show. So finally, when we hit the last show in Los Angeles, everybody was so relieved to fly back home and really straight into bed.
Right. Oh, I cannot.
But you know, this was the most stupid thing a band can do. I mean, you just don't play Bahamas and then you go up to Vancouver and yeah, I mean, it's quite clear that everybody is getting sick. I mean, this is a temperature difference of like 30, 35 degrees.
Yeah.
Celsius.
Yeah.
This was killer. It was killer. It affected me. It affected everybody. Fortunately, I did not have such a big, strong flu that I couldn't sing anymore. So everything was running down more or less smoothly, even with flu. But nevertheless, it was not nice, and it was so, from the planning, it was completely stupid.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So we should never do that again.
Should've.
So start somewhere cold, end somewhere cold.
Right.
Or start somewhere warm and end somewhere warm. That's the law here.
or gradually move up the country, you know, so the temperature changes slightly, you know, as you go up.
Yeah, okay, if it's getting warmer and warmer day by day, that's not a problem.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Vice versa is a problem, and if you do it that stupidly, as we did it, like from the Bahamas to Canada, that must be punished.
Well, I want to stray a little bit over to the latest album, My God-Given Right. This is the Halloween album that literally, if you count bonus tracks, had the most songs, not only the most songs recorded for an album, but the most original songs. Because, you know, Master of the Rings, you had a lot of songs, but you had some covers thrown in there, same with Time of the Oath. But when you look at My God-Given Right, I mean, you had 18 songs recorded. You literally probably had three albums worth of material recorded, you know, and I know you recorded a lot, or you wrote a lot of tracks for it that never really got recorded, but, you know, 18 songs, and the album seemed to do pretty well for you, at least from the reviews and from the way it was promoted and the way people reacted to it. So how did that album really do for you? And talk a little bit about your latest album, My God-Given Right.
It did great, and it came along quite naturally, I would, as far as I remember, because it was like the Straight Out of Hell album, the predecessor, really did something good all over the world for us, and suddenly we were in the top 10 and even top number 1 and top 2 album charts. It was unbelievable. So one of the most successful, if not the most successful album ever for Halloween. Unbelievable. And yeah, this drive, actually, I think we brought into the My God-Given Right album, and lots of experiences and stupid stories we had to witness or were allowed to witness during the last tour. I mean, there were so many stupid things happening.
Yeah.
And most of these themes kind of find place on in the lyrics on the Straight Out of Hell album.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a bit more versatile. So you have more funny tunes, you got some more darker tunes, because that's really what went down. So yeah, it's not an artificial made up album, because it was recorded directly after the Straight Out of Hell tour, and there were still so many impressions of the last tour. After 13 months of world tour, you have something to write about.
Right.
And that's actually what happened. That's what happened.
So why did you decide to record so many tracks for this album? And, you know, because you recorded a lot of original songs for this record, and, you know, why did you decide to record so many songs?
Because there were so many things happening during the last tour, I think, me personally, I may probably speak for everybody who's writing songs here in the band. Everybody had to say something. Everybody had ideas from the last tour and wanted to actually put it onto tape. And that's what happens. And suddenly you end up with 35 or 40 ideas, and you want to bring onto the album as much as possible. Otherwise, Marcus Wyke or I or whoever would be pissed off because he's not able to bring all the songs he would like to bring. yeah, then you end up with an album which has two or three songs out of the usual. Yeah, sometimes it could be a mistake, because I know there are a lot of people, including myself, who don't actually enjoy too long albums. I personally I'm able to listen concentrated for maybe 35, 45 minutes, and then I switch off my brain, so to say. Yeah, I'm not a very thankful listener to an over-length album. But nevertheless, for the given reasons that everybody had lots and tons of ideas and something he would like to say and put into lyrics and put into melodies, then it's very, very hard to say no. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say, I'm not the one to say, but even if I would be the one to decide, I can't say to my fellow musicians, nah, we have enough songs, you are not allowed to put this song on this song of yours onto the new album. It doesn't work like that. It's too much democracy here in the band, which sometimes is bad, as we know. But fortunately or unfortunately, it depends on which side you look at it, there is no dictatorship here in the band, so it's still a democracy. And yeah, because you can't say no, you have more songs on the album than you usually would have.
Well, one of the growing trends here in the music business, Andy, and you've been around the business side of things for a very long time, you've been doing this a very long time, you know, you know, with press releases and what labels have been doing, they've been selling a lot of vinyl and producing it. And it almost seems like, you know, a couple years ago, nobody was really buying music. Now, all of a sudden, you know, CDs are sort of the dinosaur because people are buying vinyl and then buying whatever, you know, a lot of times when you buy the vinyl, you get a code to go and download the album digitally. So you have a digital copy and you have the vinyl copy. And it's not really like older people usually buying it. It's a lot of younger people. And do you think that this is something that's going to keep growing and maybe help bands sell more records?
Maybe. Well, I see from like my nostalgic point of view, because I'm an old fart having grown up with vinyl. So for me, it's finally back to where it used to be and where it needs to be. I think it's a whole different story. If you have a vinyl in your hands, it's such the value and everything is so much greater, and you see the artwork, which on a cover, on a CD cover, I cannot really grasp the artwork. It's like it's cheap, it's small, it's behind plastic. I don't like it. Talking about vinyl, I always think, okay, that's the real thing. Here is the artwork. You really can see what the boys wanted to express, if there's something to express. You have the vinyl itself, which definitely sounds much better than CD, for not only for philosophical reasons, but it's really having more frequencies, as we all know. So the physically, it's quite clear that a good vinyl is always sounding better than a CD, simply because it's got much more low frequencies and much more high frequencies. So
right.
we don't even need to discuss that, because physically it's quite clear. And the question arises, if you have a digital download after buying the vinyl, what would I need a stupid CD? I download it and that's it. And then if I want a CD, I burn a CD for a few cents and there you go.
Well, it seems to me with vinyl that what happens with that is that there's a little bit more of a dynamic range to it, and it sounds so much different than when you're listening to a CD. And in a sense, it's cool. You know, even though I like the sound of CDs and digital files and things like that, a vinyl version of an album can sometimes be a lot of fun to listen to, and it has its own sound and uniqueness to it.
Yeah, even if the music is recorded completely digitally, but you capture it on vinyl much better than on CD, simply for the given reason. A CD limits dynamic, so it cuts at 16 bits, which is at least 8 bits less than a good recording studio. A digital recording studio is always recording with 24 bits, mm-hmm. which is much, much more dynamics, much more.
Yeah.
And if we talk about frequencies, vinyl captures from unlimited low to theoretically unlimited height. So depends on what recording you have. If you record it in the studio with, let's say, a good digital 96K recording system, then you should have yeah, down to 10 low and maybe even up to 28, 30,000 hertz in the height. So there's a lot of stuff happening, believe me.
Right.
If you cut these frequencies, you realize it, you feel it. It's something is missing. It's like cutting soul and ass, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
I'm a big fan of vinyl for not only for the sound reasons, but I think it's just the value you have in your hand, you know. Mm-hmm. It's much better to have a vinyl in your hand. You adore it much more. You worship it much more than a stupid CD.
Well,
at least talking for myself.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when I go back and I you know, a good example of something, you know, they put a little box set out for, you know, Ronnie James Dio and his solo albums, and it was like the first six or seven albums, and I bought the CD versions of them, then I bought the vinyl versions of them. You know, it was a big box set, and the vinyl versions just sounded a lot different, a lot cooler, you know, than the CD versions, in my opinion. And I noticed with Helloween too that most of your albums on vinyl translate very well. Like, for example, you know, Time of the Oath really sounded great on vinyl. And what was interesting is when I was going back and listening to the newer version of Time of the Oath on vinyl, the sound has gotten better. You know, you have the heavier vinyl now. And I thought, you know, I've always thought that Helloween albums, there's something about them that, you know, when you master them on the vinyl, they just still sound so great. And really sound very, very good. Like they're meant to be there. Like they're meant to be mastered to vinyl.
But then talking for and of ourselves, Helloween has always recorded at least full or half analog. So at the end of the day, we're using still as much analog stuff as possible. So whenever there's a choice of analog gear or digital gear, we always go for the analog gear. And at the end of the day, the only thing which is going like pure digital is the mastering itself. But the mastering itself takes place in a much, much, much higher quality than the CD can ever take. So at the end of the day, it's always worth to make a vinyl out of our masters and not to actually limit it for the CD again, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and I know lots of bands are exactly the same. So it's always worth to go for the vinyl because it will always sound better.
Well, my God-given right really sounded very good. It had some really killer songs on it that really blew me away. And talk a bit about the album cover, because you have that frozen Statue of Liberty on the front of it. And maybe talk about the meaning of that, of the album cover itself. Because you got like the little pumpkin minions running around looking like stormtroopers. And just maybe talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's actually based on the Swing of a Fallen World, which is another song on the album. You may connect You Still of War with it, and it's like going away from the typical Happy Happy Halloween, because as you know, we have lots of Happy Happy Halloween songs on the album. But I think everybody here is scared to death that maybe not in our lifetime, but we will still be affected in our lifetime from stupid things going on. I mean, mm-hmm. The thunderstorms are getting ridiculously hard, and it's like the water over here on my island, you see it rising. Fortunately, my island is 3,700 meters high, so whatever happens, we step up a little, you know. But for the rest of the world, that could be a bit different. I mean, I had a friend in the Marshall Islands, and they had to abandon their home simply because there's no land anymore. It's meanwhile covered with seawater 6 hours per day. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. No dry land anymore. So there are people who can tell you that there is something happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and this was like, yeah, this apocalypse on picture in a funny way would be the cover of My God-Given Right.
Right.
So you still see, okay, that should be, that was, or it still is New York, but covered under snow and ice, a little bit of 2012 in there. You know, that's why it's still causing a smile on the face, because you know it, you can't take it serious. Nevertheless, we wanted to pinpoint a little bit into that direction.
Right.
And because everybody's worried about it, everybody's scared about it. And I don't have a solution. I cannot tell you what to say, what to do, or what not to do. I just want to say, hey, I'm scared. Look at it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we're not the ones, probably our generation is not the one, the generation which will find solutions. I don't think so. I think the solutions have to, there is no pull the trigger or whatever, pull the button, push the button solution. I think the solution, if there is any, will have to go through decades.
Right.
Right. Or maybe even longer. I don't know.
Well, my God-given right is, you know, as far as the Helloween album goes, it's one of the most diverse albums you've ever put out. And a lot of people are going to maybe disagree with me on this, but going back and listening to all the previous albums, which is when a band comes out with a new record, I go and listen to all the old ones and to kind of compare it. And the one thing that struck me is Rabbit Don't Come Easy was a very diverse album because you had crazy, funny, happy songs like Just a Little Sign. Then you had pretty heavy stuff like Liar, and then you had stuff like songs like Nothing to Say, which were a lot different. Then you had Back Against the Wall, which was a pretty kind of very doomy, gloomy, very, very heavy, modern, you know, sounding song. And you had a lot of diversity to it, and I think that My God-Given Right is the same way, where it has 18 songs on it, and every one of them is different. And with so many tracks that are different, it really set My God-Given Right apart for me, you know, when comparing it to some of the other Helloween albums. It really basically stands on its own. And I've always thought that this record, now that I've had a year and a half, 2 years to really go back and listen to it and let it sink in with me a little bit, this is one of the most diverse records you guys have ever written.
Yeah, it's about life, I think. As I told you earlier, we are like four songwriters, and you cannot tell him or Waikio or Marcus, for example, not to put this or that song on the album. If they really want to do it, they have to. They should be allowed to do it.
Right.
And sometimes you end up with a diverted album like My God-Given Right, which I personally enjoy. I think the only mistake we did, in my humble opinion, is to put too many songs on it.
Yeah.
So for me personally, but I know there are lots of people who say, "Oh, Andy, shut up." But for me, as I told you, I'm just a stupid guy who is listening concentrated for maybe 40, 45 minutes, and then I switch off my brain.
Yeah.
And because I consider myself a very, very normal, mediocre person, I think most of the people out there will feel the same. You know. That's the only mistake I see with a long album.
Well, you know, I'm a fan of long albums, but you know, that's just me. So, you know, anyhow, this tour that you guys are going to be putting on coming up in, you know, late 2017, is this something that's also going to be coming to the U.S., coming to the States at all?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Definitely, and yes.
Awesome. Yeah,
yes. And what you see now, so everybody who is watching like the stuff on Facebook or following on the website, don't worry. I mean, these are like just the first confirmed dates, and there will be added dates nearly every day. So when it comes to United States, you may be sure we play at least all the metropoles. We're doing Canada and everything, so don't worry. It's just a question of timing.
Yeah,
that's all.
You know, the USA, as you know, is a very, very diverse country, because you know, you can go from playing a full packed house to maybe selling 300-400 tickets. You know, it all depends on what part you go to. Does that make it more difficult because of the country being so big and so diverse, and you know, different areas may not attract, you know, a huge fan base, and some might. Does it make it really hard to pick and choose where you want to book shows? Because in many cases, too, in many cities, you also have multiple metal bands playing in so many different cities in the U.S. And I know you, in some of the places that you played the last time you guys played in the U.S., you ran into a problem like that where there were more than one metal band playing in the area, sometimes two or three, and it kind of hurt your audience a little bit.
Well, put it that way, it's as far as I can witness it, because I really am not into booking and stuff like that. But what I know is that there's always trouble in filling the gaps. So if you play East Coast or West Coast, everything goes down smoothly, and there are lots of audience and metalheads. And when it comes to like cross country, then you suddenly end up with some gap shows, and you never know what happens.
Right.
You really don't know what happens. So sometimes it works out fantastically, and sometimes you go, like, after the show, you look in the dressing room, we laugh at each other and say, what was that? You know?
So yeah, yeah.
You can never predict when it comes to gap shows and filler shows. Gap shows and filler shows are shows that you have to play not to lose too much money, because travel days cost a lot of money. You have to pay your crew, even if you're not playing shows.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay the rent for the tour bus and whatever hotels, blah, 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 if you play shows or not. So that means when you have lots of off days, at the end of the day you run into pay to play. So you have to do gap shows and filler shows, and these are always very adventurous because you plan them around the East and West Coast shows.
Yeah.
Know what I'm saying?
We had one of those adventures here.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And sometimes they turn out fantastically, and sometimes they turn out to be stupid for the given reason you just mentioned, that there are already two or three metal bands playing in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just number four. And that could turn out to be great because you're having more fans in the city than the others, or it sometimes turns out to be a sad story because only 400 people show up because everybody else is with the other bands out there. So you never can predict what happens. So yeah.
Well,
nevertheless, put it that way. For me, I'm just a stupid little European German guy who is happy to play the States and traveling around all the cities in the United States. For me, it's adventure.
Yeah.
You have to also look at it from that point of view. If we drive through the United States, for me, it's nothing usual. For me, it's always something special because that's not my home country. So the States is adventure. If there are people or not, it does not take away the adventurous side.
Yeah.
So I love to tour. I love to drive through the States. And guess what? I mean, if you drive through the Midwest, for example, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I mean, you see so much things there. The country is so huge, so vast, so wow. So and there's such a lot of nice people out there. Never heard of Halloween, but they are nice people, and you talk and you have fun, and you know. So that's actually the main thing for me when it comes to touring. If there is a show mediocre or not as good as the other show, I don't care. As long as there are shows which work, there are always shows which don't work in the middle, but I don't care because I'm happy to travel and happy to see things which nobody else probably may see in his life. So
right.
This is, you can't pay that with money or, you know. So what I wanted to say is there is this old Roman guy, Seneca he's called. Also, I think it was this old Chinese freak, what's his name, Confucius. And they both said, the way is the goal. And this is something I really enjoy nowadays, because the way means when you're on the way, this is the time when you should enjoy. The concert itself is just the result. Know what I'm talking about? So the tour itself does not consist of, it doesn't consist of great shows or whatever. It's the tour itself that makes it adventurous, and that's why I'm probably still up and running. I think I'm speaking for my boys too, because that's the real thing. That's the real exit. That's the real, what's the right word in English? Success. Success is when you are actually able to travel the world. I think this is priceless.
Yeah, and you know, the band played in Cleveland for the first time in 29 years. It'd been almost 30 years since the band had played here, and you played at obviously played at the same venue that you played at the last time you were here, here at the Agora. But you know, one of the things that was great was you were able to, despite being sick, many of you guys, if you were able to, stood out, signed autographs, spoke with people, talked with people, stood out in the cold and did that. And I think a lot of fans that showed up to the show, even though there weren't a ton, they were pretty happy with that.
Yeah, and guess what? I think the best time we had in Cleveland was when we hang out with you in the freaking cold there getting our social security numbers. It may sound stupid, but this is what's still stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, this is what causes still a smile, and I think, well, that was cool, wasn't it? You know, because we were there. I mean, with you, that was real life. We were there with the policemen and having a chat and a laugh with those guys, and that's real life.
Yeah.
And look at it from my point of view. I'm standing there with you in front of these security number guys and chatting with the policemen. For you, it's normal, but for me, coming from Germany, living on Tenerife, for me, it's a priceless memory, being there, living your life.
Yeah.
Only for a few hours, but I was there. I was participating, I think that's unbelievable. I think that's the dream of every musician.
Yeah.
When you talk about touring, it's not the concert. The concert is a very, very important part of it, but I think the surroundings and whatever comes with touring, that's the real thing, you know?
Well, it's funny because I remember coming down to the hotel and you guys were like deathly ill. And I remember having to call cab and, you know, I Frank, your tour manager comes up to me and he goes, Tony, you know, because I remember Jan Biotti, your manager at Bottom Row, he basically said, look, he asked me to help you guys out with this and I did, but it was funny because Frank's like, don't mess this up. And it kind of made me laugh because, you know, I pretty much knew already what had to be done and what needed to be filled out for you. But it was interesting and it was kind of funny when he came and said that. But, yeah, it was fun. I mean, we were hanging out together and, you know, and even though not a lot of people showed up to the show, you guys played really well. You guys sounded good. And people really did enjoy you guys playing, you know, despite, you know, it snowing the way it did, and you had a couple other bands playing in the area. I thought it was a really, really cool thing, the way you guys handled yourselves. And it was just, you know, when you look back on it, it is some pretty, pretty fun memories. There's some fun memories there.
But these are the things to remember. You know, if everything runs down smoothly, you don't remember it later on.
Right.
When you're back home sitting on your sofa, you remember these things, like the bus broke down. It
right.
was freaking cold. We hang out there with Tony and getting our social security numbers, blah, blah, blah. All that is, that's being remembered. Everything else, nah, you know.
Yeah.
Now, have you guys started doing any type of songwriting at all, you know, during the long break that you're going to have here?
Not on purpose, not consciously, actually, just hobbyist sitting on the sofa collecting ideas and talking for myself means talking for everybody out there. I know the guys are the same.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, when you're sitting in front of your telly, it takes 30 minutes, you suddenly have your guitar in your hands again. So that's pretty normal. And as soon as you got the guitar, you diddle and fiddle around and suddenly there is an idea, or maybe not, but most of the times there is an idea. And you just record it to erase it off brain, so to say, system clearance.
Yeah.
When I don't record it, then it's forever in my head. It's like it's causing me sleepless nights, and you know, so I have to record it and then I erase it from my hard drive up there on my stupid head. You know. But no, I'm. I know that the boys are pretty much the same. Everybody is diddling and fiddling around because it's still a hobby. It's my guitar. I mean, that's my life. So, as you know, I told you once, I was forced to the microphone. I never wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be the guitarist. Now, the only occasion to play guitar is at home writing songs.
Yeah.
Going back to something we talked about a little bit earlier in this interview, you talked about Helloween using a lot of analog equipment to record records. And, you know, when I think of bands that do that, you know, take, you know, just for example, Ian Lucassen from Arion uses a lot of old school analog synthesizers on his albums instead of using, say, the emulators, and all of the albums that Ian does sound amazing. And, you know, do you still use a lot of that vintage equipment, you know, especially like with the preamps, like the old school tube preamps and everything?
Yeah, preamps is very important. We got like tons of tube preamps and tons of Neves and SSLs because sounding much better, much sadder than the rest. So whenever you have a digital circuit in the preamp, you mix analog and digital, and I hate that. It sounds flat. It I don't know. I don't like that. I don't say it's worse. It's maybe philosophy, but I don't like it. If you take an AB comparison to a real Neve preamp, and the best example, for example, there's a Neve design from API, the 500 series. You take the old 500, there was no digital circuit in it, and now the new ones are pretty much the same preamps, but they, for probably, cost reasons, they put in some digital circuits, and it sounds flat.
Yeah.
Yes, the character is there. It's definitely API, but it's not as dynamic. It's not as sad. So something happens there when you change the good old analog parts and think, oh, the digital does at least the same job. It's not true. It's not true. So lots of people now are out there looking for the old 500 series and paying ridiculous amount of money for it, and nobody wants the new ones. Yeah, that's the best recent example.
Like when Pro Tools and everything first started coming out and getting big, I bought an old Neve 1073, and you know, it sounds so much better and so much different than, say, you know, a plugin or say a newer version of it.
Yeah, you can't. It's not fair to compare them. I mean, on the other hand, it's not fair from the manufacturer to put the name on it, which suggests that it's the real thing out there, the real analog emulation. It doesn't work like that. It's not fair for the consumer, because the consumer thinks he's got the real thing for like 20 times less money. But believe me, it's only having the character of the original one, but it's never having the sound and the depth. You cannot achieve that.
Right.
How should you? Impossible. I think it's at least for the people, like the kids. I remember when I was 15 and I wanted to record music. If I think back, then I would have loved to at least have the characters of these great preamps or equalizers or compressors. For a bit of money, I have like the characters of the big things, of the real things. That works, but it's only the character. The sound itself is done in the real world, obviously.
Right.
Because, as you know, I mean, you need so many things to finally. I mean, even if you have a converter who translates the analog information into the digital, and if it's a stupid cheap converter, how can you ever expect a good sound? And
right.
how could you ever expect your plugins to work as good as they could if the signal you bring in is all there are so many components which the people need to understand to finally realize that the real world is the real world and the digital world is the digital world.
Yep.
I mean, you can do so many great things in the digital domain, but you should never expect it to sound as good as the real thing.
Well, as always, it's always great to talk to you, and it's always great to do it in the interview format too, because, you know, it's been a long time since I've really had you on my radio show. So, you know, obviously you had a lot to say on this thing. So with that, Andy, I'm going to ask you, do you have any last words for the fans and maybe something you do want to say to them?
Hi, Metalheads. This is Andy Darris from Halloween, and I just had a nice talk and chat with my old friend Tony. I hope you enjoy the interview. Forgive my humble English. Sometimes I'm too much of a German here, I know, but nevertheless, I hope you enjoy it. And even more, I hope to see you on the next tour, which will probably be, I fear it's becoming 2018, but nevertheless, we hit the stage with the Pumpkins United. So this means it's 2.5-3 hour shows with the original singer and the original guitarist, which will be Michael Kiske and Kai Hansen. Yeah, I'm very thrilled, very excited, as you may hear through the telephone. stay healthy, keep listening to metal, and I love you all. See ya.